You are listening to the podcast That's Life in Sweden, or as we say in Swedish, Sånt är livet i Sverige, with me, your host, Lisa Orsimäki. Today I want to welcome back Dr. Birgit Schreiber from Freiburg, Germany, a winner of the Noam Chomsky Research Achievement Award in 2022. She's also the Senior Higher Education Leadership Consultant. How are you, Birgit?
Lisa, I'm being well. I'm very excited to be here. This week we have the week of I think it's International Women's Day in a few days, and so it's a special week for all of us.
Absolutely. Now, you are dedicated to higher education. You're actually exemplary of your dedication to higher education is exemplary. That's what I meant to say. And especially to student affairs. And you know, since we last spoke a year ago, which was actually 6th of January 23, you have been very busy writing books. That has actually led us to today's topic on coaching, which is also a favorite of mine. But before we do, can you just briefly talk about how in the writing of your books you came to identify coaching as something that you're really keen on?
Thank you, Lisa, for that lovely question. It's been a very exciting and very busy time. The books are focused on professionalization of student affairs and services and all the allied services in higher education and what that means in different places across the globe. So we're starting a global professionalization program for student affairs, and we've had fantastic responses from people across the globe. And why this is so exciting is because higher education looks very different in different parts of the world. And so the professionalization and the support we give the staff needs to be quite different in these parts. So maybe I can just add that the coaching goes with professionalization because it genuinely motivates for a climate and for a person's performance and leadership towards student and institutional success.
What are the differences? If you say coaching looks very different from, around the world.
So there are some aspects that are quite generic in a sense that if a person has to deal with their peers or their colleagues or their managers or students, they always have to manage themselves in that relationship. So I help coaches or help clients to focus about what are they doing, which is helpful, and what is it not? So what behaviors and cognitive patterns are not helpful in them achieving what they want to achieve? Now, the other thing that is quite a generic and quite a common experience of all people across the globe is that they find themselves in what Whitchurch and Homi Bhabha and so have called the third space. So it's being in this very hybrid space in higher education, not quite just an academic, not quite just a leader or executive, but somewhere in between where we have to navigate complexity. So we navigate supervision with teaching and research and being a staff member and a managerialism and funding projects and so forth and so forth. So we navigate a number of roles. Now, So those are the general aspects. But what is unique is that different spaces in the world have got different systems. So, for instance, in the European space, we can be quite clear about our roles as academics and rely on a public health system for our students, for instance. Whereas in Africa, that isn't so. So I'm generalizing, obviously, So in Africa, when we focus on, let's say, supervision or research, and we work with our students, we need to remember that there is very little public health care in their contexts. And sometimes their communities don't have security and safety and running water and electricity and so forth. So we need to just navigate these systems differently in different parts of the world.
Right. So what about yourself? Have you had coaching yourself, and can you talk about your experience?
Yes, I've been a therapist myself, a psychotherapist myself for 25 years and a coach for 5 years. And so, of course, I've also enjoyed therapy and coaching very, very much. What has been very useful for me is that coaching offers a very sort of hands-on practical part that enlightens and frees me up in a way that psychotherapy takes a bit sort of a longer path and a more depth-focused approach.
Mm.
So for me, there have been a lot of aha moments and a lot of sort of experiences of, oh, finally there's somebody who can focus on me and my needs and help me navigate my situation in the here and now. And so, yeah, so there's been a lot of experience myself.
Mm. So when you talk about, are you talking about yourself as an academic who is also maybe supervising students, maybe even have students in lectures where you're a lecturer or teacher? I'm just trying to get my head around when you say about my experience and when you talk about the unique needs higher education staff have.
So if I were to coach a staff member of higher education, it might be a manager, a leader, an executive, helping them lead more efficiently, be that a faculty or a department or a division. Or I sometimes also coach academics and helping them be efficient supervisors. How do they set boundaries? How do they demand or, you know, communicate their expectations towards their students? So it's helping the supervisors be more efficient and more effective in their supervision. We sometimes have people with research who say, I want to make 2 or 3 publications this year. How do I get it right? Keep me on track. What are my barriers? What's holding me back? So again, for the coaching, we want to focus on the person's goals and what they bring to the coaching relationship. So you and I, being perhaps in different positions in the academic environment, in the university, we may bring quite different needs and different goals to the coaching relationship.
Mm.
So maybe we can start with distinguishing coaching and mentoring and therapy. So they're usually quite blurry and people not quite clear what is what next to the other. So coaching, I mean, they're all three aiming to help get insight into your lived experience, into your challenges, into the choices you make in your work or private life.
Yeah.
But coaching is usually aimed at a kind of personal discovery and growth with a special reference to your workplace, but also your relationships and conflict and how do you set boundaries. And I mean, I've had people with adult attention deficit wanting to have coaching around how do they manage it.
Hmm.
Mentoring, we often use mentoring when we acquire skills and knowledge, but we also when we want the person to be assimilated into a specific environment. So when we bring them into a guild or we bring them into a university and we help them cope in that environment. So that's mentoring. Therapy, on the other hand, is more often centered around overcoming past patterns and thinking about how the patterns that you have first learned when you lived and loved and laughed with your family, how these patterns are now playing out in your current life. Recently, I had a person in a middle management who applied for a senior management position, and she needed coaching. So she had interviewed before, and she has a very powerful CV, but she somehow in the interviews wasn't able to translate her CV into the interview situation. So she just struggled to bring herself across. She was nervous, and she was she was doing sort of gender typical behaviors, giggling, laughing, you know, so some of that. What we focused on there was saying, if she wants to be in that kind of role, what kind of attributes can she offer and how can she demonstrate them in the interview so that it becomes convincing that she can do that? So we practiced, we looked at her CV, just what are the strengths that she wants to show. We practiced how do you demonstrate these strengths in the here and now in that interview. Because the interview, of course, was a two-day process. It wasn't just an hour conversation. It was a two-day process. So there was a lot of practicing we needed to do on how she spoke, how she presented herself, and how she what examples she brought when they asked her questions. And so that was an example. And, of course, she was successful to get that job, you know, because she had prepared so well for it. So that's an example of where we coached. Another example is where I had a case, again, it was a woman who struggled to set boundaries. She was struggling to say no in a way that made her feel okay about it. So she was struggling. She felt guilty. She, you know, wanted to overextend herself. She was constantly exhausted. She struggled with sleep and anxiety and self-doubt. And it came down to her being really struggling to set a firm, kind boundary and to give feedback to the other person that, no, something was overstepping her boundary, and she would like to, you know, draw a boundary and close something off or say no. And so we needed to look at the process around that. So what was her, so we first explored, of course, what she needed to do. So we explore, we look at the situation around, we analyze what it is that's holding her back. We're looking at her typical responses, be that a fight, flight, or a flee, or a fawn, or a fair response to conflict. And we looked at how can she navigate a conflict, so it's expected and anticipated, and then enter the situation in a way that she can come out feeling good about it. So those are some of the situations that we're practicing here.
How did you come across her? Was it because HR then suggested for her to contact you, or you knew, or HR said, look, we have a person here we're really interested in, but she needs some support? How did that work? How did you connect?
Yes, I mean, some of it is just people coming to me and saying, hi, I really want to have some time with you and discuss some of my difficulties. So I suppose I'm a bit sort of known in the domain. So people come forward and ask me. I've got two colleagues who work in universities who are in HR who do refer people to me. But a lot of it is word of mouth. It's people who speak to others and say, look, I'm struggling with this. What should I do? And then people refer each other. So I think there's a lot of organic referral word of mouth and people. Yeah, wanting to help one another, and so they refer on. Yeah.
So that is one side of coaching, what you are doing, but there's also the coaching that happens within the institution where you can support academics or leaders or middle managers, whatever position they may be in regards to particularly looking at coaching and supporting students.
Right, absolutely. Exactly. So what we do have in institutions often is mentoring and support programs that students offer to other students. So we have senior students supporting, mentoring, tutoring, coaching junior students, particularly around academic performance.
Yep.
So that happens a lot. That's quite right. That isn't sort of in a way, though, the kind of personal coaching that you and I would go for.
Yep. I'm definitely coming to you.
Yeah, well, I think what's so interesting is that coaching is really freeing us up to kind of focus on a specific area and looking. So we first assess and see what areas are you successful in, and what kinds of skills and insights and resources can you borrow from the areas that do work into areas where you struggle. So coaching isn't doing magic. It's not something new. You can do those things already. It's just that we need a bit of a nudge and a bit of a practice and a bit of a push to generalize these areas where we do well into areas that don't do so well.
Yes. Look, I think it's absolutely wonderful to hear that this is something that you're offering, because I think sometimes, well, I'm not familiar that this sort of coaching is actually offered. Yeah. You know, at university, normally we have, you know, there's someone who may mentor you because you're new, or you know, by a senior academic who will support you, and sometimes that doesn't even happen. And so
That's right. You
have a lot of academics, certainly new academics, who are kind of trying to find their way. And and having something like this, I think, would definitely not only be a benefit to the university, but absolutely to the person.
Absolutely. And I think you're so right. So the mentoring helps a person adjust to the new environment. So it brings them into the fold.
Mm.
And that's sort of an onboarding. And often we do mentoring programs in an onboarding effort when new people come in and we show them how it's done and how does it work and what is the culture like and so forth. Whereas coaching is more about, I've been onboarded and I'm in this environment, but there's a whole lot of things I'm not so familiar with and I'm struggling. You know, I'm struggling to all kinds of things. And how do I navigate that kind of situation? How do I focus, or how do I manage and navigate a challenge?
What would you say are some of the powerful models, and can you talk about why and how do they work?
It's a great question. What kinds of models are there? Well, there are a number of various different approaches, coaching models, the situational coaching, achievers coaching, leadership coaching, and then there's some sort of more comprehensive integral coaching. And, you know, they have different approaches, but in essence, they focus from an assessment of a situation to setting specific goals and exploring the accelerators and the barriers and thinking about the hooks, like what keeps you hooked in this situation? How come you end up in the situation again and again? So it's an analysis of the kind of the hooks in the situation, and then practicing new avenues, testing new avenues, getting feedback from your coach, and then going out and practicing what you've learned. So it's an action, a time of action, and then reviewing how did that work. And you know what's interesting here is that when we then review, and I've often found that with clients, when we review how has that situation played out differently, how is this now working out for you, that then the clients will say, well, you know, other things have shifted as well. So because we live in complex environments, when we shift one aspect of our behavior or our thought pattern, somehow other systems are also impacted. So just to give you an example, if, for instance, we feel overwhelmed at work and we learn to say no, and we learn to say no in an acceptable, firm, assertive way, and we've practiced that, and we've practiced that really over 10 sessions, not long, you know, then that ability to be assertive and to recognize one's own limitations and to be able to communicate it in time in a way that is nice and acceptable, that ability gets spread to the personal life, to the family life, to the, you know, relationship life. And so a whole load of things can shift when we shift one aspect.
So what would you say are some of the aha moments in coaching for you?
For me? Well, in my own coaching, you know, it's been, that's a good question. I think for me, what's been the most powerful is practicing things. So practicing behaviors. I think because of, I suppose, my training, I've had a lot of, I have a lot of insight into my own shortcomings, my own barriers, my own challenges. But I'm really, it's about practicing those behaviors and making sure that I can translate my insight into behavior. That for me has been a real aha moment.
Wow. Okay.
And
so some of the people you have coached, what have been significant that they have shared with you, that this actually, this coaching helped me to do this?
Oh, it's there's so many, Lisa. I wonder, you know, it has to do with realizing what my goals are, why I feel satisfied at work or why I don't feel satisfied at work, changing trajectories at work, saying, well, I thought I'm in this track, you know, I'm going up that route, but actually, come to think of it, something else actually excites me. Or really realizing that I want to step up and take on a more senior leadership role, and how do I do this? Where are my possibilities? Mm. It's really on every front. And again, coaching isn't just a professional thing. It's also for personal issues. Conflicts at home, assertiveness at home, communicating one's needs, communicating what one wants, you know, and how... and. You know, so we often assume people around us know what it is that makes us tick and that we desire, but they don't know that. How can they know that? And so how do we say what we want and what we desire in a way that other people can respond meaningfully to that? Mm. So the shifts can be from professional to personal, you know, into your family in every sort of way.
Mm-hmm. Which tools and techniques are used, and why is coaching usually so intensive, and is it short or is it medium term? I mean, how long would you say coaching session?
Again, different models will tell you different things. I like modeling, I'm using a short term model, which is usually 12 sessions. Medium term starts at 24 sessions. Why is it so intensive? I think when we feel listened to, and when somebody helps us think about our own self, I think that is intensive. It can be very challenging and very confronting. Mm. And I think that that's what makes it so powerful. So being listened to is a wonderful thing, and it gives us space to find our own solutions. And I suppose coaching is fun, you know, it's active, it's lively, it's full of humor, and we play with thoughts and play with practices and laugh at ourselves. And I think that that's what makes it fun. Why the short term is quite interesting. The longer term models, a long term, I took 2, 3, 4 years. It has to do with resources. It has to do with how much time we have and energy and so forth. And also how deep running the difficulties are. So I think that, you know, when we get into therapeutic approaches, then that is more sort of the deeper laying patterns and the really sort of bad entrapments when people feel deeply entrapped in their own histories and they don't know how to get out. So coaching is shorter term. It's practicing new behaviors and thinking patterns. I was going to tell you, the Harvard Business School did a lovely research on leadership programs and whether the events-based, which are once-offs, or short-term, short-term being over at least 2 or 3 sessions, or longer-term are the most effective. And it was found that the short-term, so not the once-off events, but the short-term being 1, 2, 3, 4 sessions over 4 weeks or so, that they are very effective. The learning and the change happens between the sessions, and then in the sessions, we practice and examine and review and we look at it. But the important part is the time between these sessions, because that is where things get practiced. And, you know, so that's when we,
And people check them out in real life.
Exactly.
Apply them in real life. It works or not work. And then they can go back and discuss it.
That's it. Exactly. Exactly. Mm. Spot on. That's it. Mm.
So really but don't you think it depends on, it sounds a bit like there is a course people do. Is it only one person, or do you have maybe 3 or 4 people, or how does it work?
That's interesting. Usually I like a one person because it's way more intensive and we can move much faster in a very tailored way. But I've also had groups, and we have groups between 4 and 7, not more than that, because between 4 and 7, what happens interestingly is that people watch one another and say, oh, if that happens there, I know that happens with me. Or, you know, somebody will say, well, this is my typical response in a conflict situation. And then the other person will say, oh, this is what my boss does. Oh, interestingly. So we watch each other in this very sort of slow motion way, in a way that we can analyze and critique one another and review and look at one another very slowly and in depth, and that helps. So being in a group is very effective for sure, but individually it's just different, you know.
Yeah.
So I prefer from how effective and powerful it is. I think a singular person is more effective and more powerful. We're in that session for 50 minutes. I focus just on you, your individual responses, your feelings, your thoughts, and we can get right into it. And I think it allows for, but again, let me say that in a group, something else is possible that isn't possible individually. So in a group, you know, we have this fishbowl effect where people watch one another, and we have vicarious learning where people learn via the other one's learning. And that can be very powerful.
And it and it also can be that, you know, sometimes in when you have groups, and depending on what the subjects are, what topics are you touching on, what are your questions, that there are a lot of people who may not want to share. They simply shut down. And that can be detrimental to what you're trying to do, you know? And so there is something to speak both for and maybe against this kind of, whether it does it work in a group situation or in a private situation. I think definitely, it sounds like the private situation is more, you get more results. So can anyone use it, and who is it for when in coaching?
Yes, it's good. It's a lovely question. I think everybody should do it. I think everybody can enjoy it. I think it's an amazing experience to reflect on yourself and your career, your professional choices, but also your personal choices. And it shifts towards a place in which you feel more alive and more in control of your life. So everybody benefits. So my clients come from all layers and levels of higher education, and also all domains within education. So we help leading and managing, increasing research outputs, much what I said earlier on. You know, it helps the supervision, teaching. It helps with boundaries of work-life balance, which is, you know, an area we often get so wrong in higher education because it's such a blurry line between what's private and what's teaching, you know. So, yes, it's for everybody at everybody's level of development or level of professional progression.
So what sort of themes do you address? Can you share some of your themes?
Again, it's really, you know, whoever's listening now can think, well, what is the area that I would do? And they think about an area they struggle with, and there it is. That would be the theme. But in general, for higher education particularly, it's about complexity of the environment and how hard it is to navigate upwards, downwards, but also horizontally, how to manage staff and students. It can be about gender advancement or gender, you know, imbalances, career trajectories, how we manage conflict and set boundaries. And often it is about self-worth and, you know, the famous imposter syndrome that people feel, well, am I really, you know, do I have my rightful place? Have I a right to be here? Do I feel confident enough to be here? And then the usual things of anxiety and depression and family problems and relationship, time management, and, you know, all the stress symptoms that we usually that usually develop.
Do you think it has gotten worse, or there is more of issues happening?
Oh, it's a good question. I don't know if we have more stress than before. But we certainly are able to articulate it. We have a language for it. I mean, 50 years ago, you know, I don't think we spoke about stress and coping the way we speak about it now. So we have developed a consciousness and a language around it. And I think the second part is we've developed a consciousness that I have a right to a life that isn't so stressed, that I can create my life in a way that doesn't just have me on the edge of coping all the time, you know. So I think that's what's brought on a more of a consciousness around coping and stress.
Thinking about it, it's going to be now International Women's Day, and I understand you are in a process, or you're writing a book, or are you doing a program on it? Can you share some of what is a Women in Leadership program? What is it about?
The Women in Leadership program I run with a wonderful colleague in South Africa at an umbrella body that advances women in leadership in higher education. And our focus is really about developing the self and emboldening the self to speak, you know, one's own boundaries, one's expectations, one's goals, one's needs and desires, and to do that in a way that is assertive and clear, and helping others understand how to not violate one's boundaries. So Women in Leadership is a really a program that emboldens a woman to step up and step into a space that then where she asserts what she desires for herself in a way. That's the one aspect. The second aspect of the program is that my colleague and I help these participants shape the environment into a gender fair environment. So there's some environments across the world that are particularly gender imbalanced. And in this program, women, you know, we speak about how do we recognize systems and practices that are particularly sexist, are particularly gender unfair, and how do we correct them in the environment, in the context?
And what else? There are 8 components to the program.
Yes, did you look that up? I'm surprised.
Yes, I did. No. I want to know what they are. I think everyone wants to know because International Women's Day are happening now.
Yeah. So the first aspect is leadership. We look at what is leadership and what different styles there are and what different triggers there might be. And then how do people, what different styles there are and what people's preferences are, and whether these preferences are fit for the situation they're in. Are they useful in that situation? And then we practice a leadership fluidity. So sometimes we need a certain kind of assertiveness, a certain kind of leadership, and at times not, and at times something different. And you know, is there a recognition around the different leadership styles? And then we speak a lot about self-care and coping. How do I ensure that I recognize boundaries, recognize when I'm not doing well, always with the assumption that when I do well, I'm at my best and I enjoy it, you know. So that's the one aspect. The second aspect is that we look at higher education processes, sort of broad processes, finance, HR, managerialism, performativity, transformation, those sorts of things at higher education, and social justice and SDGs, all kinds of things in higher education that the universities all share. And then the third part is where we look at transformation, which is really helping, particularly in Southern Africa, helping universities to change, and how do I affect sustainable change? And then the fourth aspect, and now I'm going to have to think about it because I don't know the program off by heart. The fourth aspect, I can't think about it now, but it is, you know, usually that's sort of the trajectory. It's leadership, it's context, it is transformation. And then I can't now think of the fourth one.
What do you think, which one do you think is, when you have been working in these women's leadership programs, what do you think is the most challenging for women?
So it depends on, again, which context we're in. So I work a lot in the European context. I'm currently in Germany. I've worked a lot in the UK and in America and again in Africa. So there are different challenges and different ruptures and different barriers to women's equality. I don't know, you know, part of it is, of course, that men do need to, I'm generalizing, goodness me, it's an awful generalization to say men, but some people do need to check their own behaviors and need to watch how they talk over people and ignore certain people and evaluate them on looks and so forth and so forth. What women can do is just simply, but to be more conscious of themselves and assert themselves more firmly in a way that they needn't feel so guilty about and needn't feel so so cautious about. So I think in some environments, assertiveness and clarity is valued. And I help women find that voice to be more clear, more assertive, more outspoken about what it is that they're needing. And Lisa, you know, just to come back to certain things about practicing. So just to practice to speak and not be silenced when somebody speaks over you. That's a matter of practicing. Practice to finish your sentence as you've set it out to do, and then put a full stop behind it and wait. So that's a practice. And that communicates assertiveness and clarity that leaves you feeling good about it, you know. So I think, again, to come back to the coaching aspect of practicing a skill, there are really some skills we as women need to practice. And I think coaching is an effective tool in that.
If you think about African women in comparison to American women, the main differences would relate to the patriarchal systems. But then again, I'm wondering, America is becoming very patriarchal.
Indeed, yes.
And I'm thinking Sweden is pretty interesting because here we do have some kind of equality between the sexes, and it's wonderful to see men with their kids and prams out in the on the streets.
You know, but one thing I can reassure you about, Lisa, is that in Sweden you have one of the best gender pay gaps in the world, and your career interruption that women experience because they have a family or whatever, the career interruption penalties aren't severe in Sweden. So you've got a fantastic model that many other countries would, you know, we would do well to do half as well as you do. So Sweden is doing very well. I mean, there's some areas to go for sure. You know, there's always area for improvement also in Sweden. But you certainly are a beacon of hope for gender balance for the rest of the world, you know.
Yes, and right now we don't have enough female professors in higher education. And so that's a bit of a challenge. And of course you understand why that is. A lot of women have children and they want to spend time with their children. But what is also happening is that you have also men who want to spend time at home when they can do so. But yes, look, it is complex. And how is, just before we finish, how is Germany in when it comes to gender equality?
I think we're in the same. We're not quite as doing quite as well, but there's only a few percentage points different between Sweden and Germany. I think Germany has a gender pay gap and what we call career interruption penalties. So there's penalties that they're not becoming professors or whatever because women tend to, you know, have a family, and so they need to interrupt their careers. But I think there's a lot of awareness around it, and there's legislation that unfair bias based on gender isn't a fair practice. So there is legislation around that, much like there is in Sweden, but it's a culture around it.
Yes.
That, you know, when people speak, I mean, I remember from myself when I had children and, you know, my own family and cousins would come and say, goodness me, you haven't stopped working. And nobody would challenge my husband on that, you know.
So exactly.
I mean, it's a culture. Yeah, it's a culture, you know. But again, I think we're in a better place than in many parts of the world that I've worked in. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what do you do? What's next for you? Are you hanging around here in Europe? Are you heading for the US? Are you going to go to, I mean, maybe the safest place considering all the problems in our world, and certainly here in Europe, is there a country that is totally safe from all Putins and Trumps and NATO and, you know, I mean, I just want to find a country where we are talking about peace instead of worrying about the latest weapon that will destroy everyone.
I know. It's a crazy place. But, you know, in a globalized world, I think there is never a country where you can just close your eyes to your neighbor's sufferings. And so while we are so aware of each other, and as we must take care of each other and make sure that the world is a better place, So I suppose there's never a place where we can just, you know, feel completely, utterly safe and sheltered from the woes of the world. No.
Mm. Oh, no. You know, yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say not to watch certain people. That'll ruin your day. You know, that is just one start to monitor what your social media intake is. Yeah, so that I think is one. Yeah.
It's quite scary. It is quite scary. But having said that, so what's next for you?
Well, I'm here. I've been involved in a number of projects. One of them is that we want to start, or we're going to start, an international professionalization program for student affairs and services. At IASIS, which is a global organization, we've started to develop a program. The board has given the green light. We've met a bunch of experts to help us shape it. And we're about to, in May, June, we're about to go live with a program that helps student affairs practitioners and leaders to become more effective in their spaces. So that's a very exciting project.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Mm. That it sounds like life is keeping you busy.
Yes, that's true. Yes.
Look, it has been just wonderful to speak with you. And I thank you so much for taking your time. And I'm looking forward to hearing all about the student affairs development when that happens.
Thank you very much, Lisa. It's been, yes, and it's so exciting always being back and chatting with you about these developments. I really hope that coaching becomes a good practice in Sweden. It's just such a fun practice and such a freeing and enlivening practice for people. And I hope that a lot of people take it up.
And you have been listening to the podcast Sånt är livet i Sverige, or in English, That's Life, here in Sweden, with me, Lisa Orsimäki. Till next time, take care of yourself and each other. Bye for now.